Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me, Captain Kirk.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Scott.
The charming negress. Oh, forgive me, my dear. I know that in my time some use that term as a description of property.
But why should I object to that term, sir? You see, in our century, we've learned not to fear words.
May I present our communications officer, Lieutenant Uhura?
The foolishness of my century had me apologizing where no offense was given.
We've each learned to be delighted with what we are.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert. Your host for the Comic Shop Show.
What a way to begin the new year, folks. If you hear the sound of my voice, it doesn't sound quite as stupendous. It's because our mics are down. So we're going to have to do it the old school way. And again, our apologies. Folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio featuring Captain Kirk, the uncanny Darrow Bean, of course, D-Bert, a.k.a. the Afro Nerd. Folks, we have a lot to get to. Again, Happy New Year. Let's make it a festive one. Let's make it a safe one also, and as well as an informative one. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Let's go to a New Year's Nerdcore groove. Why not? This is Monumental, Monumental by The Last Emperor. We'll be back in a few moments, and again, let's groove.
Righteous, it's my career and conflict is just a job risk. No stopping this when I build rhymes like an Egyptian obelisk. Watch me get down to your province, town, or populace. And my life rhyme is prime, possess the matrix like Optimus. Now you'll get framed like a diploma in your spiritual coma. I'm a black more like Othello, but I will die possess the owner. Simon Studdy might walk on a stage of solid marble. He's a fly, simply startled and yells Shazam like Captain Marvel, are you? Aware of the fact that I left mankind devastated, and they still look for the blueprints of the monuments that I've created. See the gods lie, don't compare my hard drive to your floppy disk. Chicago to Gotham City, New York to Metropolis. From city streets to Athens streets, from the pyramids to the Acropolis. My final resting place will be a solid gold sarcophagus. But what I can understand is how these foolish humans use the mic to their advantage and get lost like the city of Atlantis. You're a long way from Kansas, and this is more than just black bone. You gotta be fresh, yes, and never talk in a whack tone. Cause once I got you in my attack zone, you can click your heels 3 times like Dorothy and couldn't get back home. So drop the mic and save those whack rhymes for later. Cause my battles be more broken arrows than Christian Slater. May the force be with you. It's true, nothing in life is coincidental. The Emperor is monumental.
Monumental.
For mortal men who pretend they never knew.
Monumental.
For these MCs thinking that they can do.
Monumental.
For the simple things in life that suit me. The dead ancestors that speak through me.
Monumental.
For mortal men who pretend they never knew.
Monumental.
For these MCs thinking that they can do me.
Monumental.
For the simple things in life that suit me. The dead
Okay, we're back once again, The Last Emperor, and that was Monumental. Folks, this is The Grindhouse. Of course, this is The Comic Shop at 6 p.m., of course, After Nerd featuring Captain Kirk at 7 p.m. And without further ado, let's get to the infamous crew, our own podcast enterprise crew. First up, of course, is the captain. Captain, you're needed in engineering once again. Let's get to it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Speaking on backup.
audio. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Okay, and of course we have the uncanny Daryl B.
Rest in peace, James Avery.
Yes, what a loss, man. The voice of, well, you know him for the Uncle Phil, but he's also the voice of who? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
You Shredder on Ninja Turtles, and he was James Rhodes on the Iron Man stuff from the 90s.
Oh, you know, that I did not know. So he definitely has his foot in nerd lore. He's definitely a relatively young person in what we consider to be young nowadays. I mean, he wasn't, I think he was 65, a heart issue. I believe his wife went to get him something to eat, and he came back. He was hospitalized because of the heart issue. I believe he had a bypass surgery. When she came back, he was gone. So once again, also Juanita Moore from The Imitation of Life. Actress died at the age of 99. So we're losing the greats, folks. That's how it goes, unfortunately. Gentlemen, we have a lot to get into. Let's talk about 2014, what to look forward to. There's a lot on the grill. We spoke a little bit about this last time. I want to get your impressions as to what you think will happen this year. Do you think it might be more? Let's go to Daryl. Do you think we might see even a bigger year? I mean, I can't imagine a year being bigger than 2013, except for maybe 2015 with Avengers versus Superman versus Batman. But this year, Captain America and Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, there's a lot. The second installment of the Planet of the Apes reboot. This is going to be a pretty big. I just went off this off the top of the dome. Darren, what are your thoughts about 2014 as far as our type of stuff, sci-fi cinema?
2014, I'm looking for a network and cable TV to catch up to the film. Because your guy's favorite show, Blacklist, has already pushed the network TV to its boundaries, along with Hannibal, right? So I see, and I'm including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in this, all right? I see 2014, these shows starting to step their game up to match their film counterparts, all right? I expect excellence out of Captain America 2 or Captain America the Winter Soldier, all right? I'm expecting an okay Guardians of the Galaxy movie, all right? But what I'm not expecting like the bottom to fall out. I'm not expecting crap, all right? I put this on the stuff I sent you. Even the last trailer for Amazing Spider-Man 2 with the Electro stuff, that's really got me intrigued. I'm actually more intrigued to see that for Jamie Foxx's Electro than see Spider-Man. All right? So I just want the envelope to be getting pushed forward. All right, and when I say the envelope being pushed forward, hey, DC, Marvel, we still got our eyes on you in terms of diversity in this thing. All right, not just black, but Latino, Asian, you know, it's a full universe out there. We got our eyes on you. Remember that. Cap?
Well, I will piggyback on what the great Daryl B. says. I think the Guardians movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, I think that'll be an okay installment. I'm not really inspired really to go see it, but this is what we do. I will definitely see it. I think the Captain America movie, The Winter Soldier, will be a step up from the first Captain America. I think Chris Evans will deliver a better performance. He's not bad in any of these movies. Don't get me wrong. He is not bad. But as I said before, when you have the type of actors such as Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man, such as someone we'll talk about now, I don't remember his name offhand, but you guys probably do, the actor that plays Loki. When you're talking
Tom Hiddleston.
There you go. And then, you know, when you're talking about Samuel Jackson, and you're dealing with S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything. When you're talking about these individuals, he knows innately that he has to, Chris Evans now, innately knows that he has to step it up some. And also the film itself has to step it up. It's not only his dilemma, it's also the writing and everything else. And it looks like it has stepped it up some. So that would be interesting. But what I'm really amped for is Godzilla. That's what I'm amped for. I'm amped for that movie more so than anything else as far as, you know, going into this year. Everything else I see, okay, Planet of the Apes, I think that would rather be intriguing towards the, you know, end of the summer, or they'll probably push it back a little bit, probably get it around September, October. That's how these things go a lot of times. You know, let's see, you have the Spider-Man movie. You know, real glossy. I'm not really looking forward to it like that, but of course I'm going to see it. And I would say that's about it, you know. I think this year, to answer the question, I think we get more of the same of 2013. I think going forward, 2015 will be more of a breakout year. We don't lose any ground here from the geek nerd aspect, I don't think at all. But that's normally how it goes. One year is, okay, it's cool. Then the next year you get the oh, my God feeling. And you get, again, it goes back to it's cool. Then you get another oh, my God feeling. So I think this would be a legitimate year. I don't think we lose any ground whatsoever. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's some things that I failed to mention. I mean, there's the two Hercules releases, which I'm not really sure about. But, I mean, there's a lot available. Paranormal Activity, that's a franchise that's been around for a long time. We're also talking about, I Frankenstein comes out this month. We'll see how that does. Usually January is an indicator of stuff that sucks, but you never know. You never know. Hopefully things will be better. The Cap just mentioned, of course, the Planet of the Apes, that franchise is back again. 300, Rise of an Empire, that's coming back. I mean, you just name it. I have reserved hope for Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, they have some talent attached to it, you know, but that's a real uber geek. And I want to get Darryl's opinion on this. That's a real uber geek franchise, or not even a franchise yet, uber geek property. How many people really know? I mean, I'm eager to see it because I know about them. And even I don't have, as much as I do know about Guardians of the Galaxy, there have been a number of iterations of that property in print going back for the last 30 or 40 years. So I guess we kind of sort of know which version we will get because the comic book, the fifth or sixth iteration of the comic, has been released within the last year and a half. You know, how well do you think this will do considering that not that many people, the general public, the geeks will see it, but the general public is really what is needed for this thing to be pushed into the upper stratosphere. I mean, I suspect Marvel is trying to make this their own version of Star Wars. So how well do you think this thing will really do, Darryl?
Well, I look at it this way. This is their cosmic version of the Punisher and Ghost Rider. You know, we're going to put out something, we're going to test the waters, all right, and we're going to put it out in this slot to just whet the appetites of everybody. We're not expecting it to go over like gangbusters. We're just whetting the appetite for what's coming later. That's essentially what Guardians is. They actually hurt this film by making the second Avengers movie Age of Ultron. If the second Avengers movie was going to be the Thanos one and you had the Thanos lead in with the Guardians of the Galaxy and the buzz after the first weekend of people going, oh, my God, you need to see how they set up Thanos in this. You got to go and check this out. I didn't realize he was such a badass. You know, And it would have helped this movie more. As it is, people have calmed down regarding the Thanos spoiler at the end of the Avengers movie. And now he's an antagonist, but we don't really got any idea as to the plot of Guardians right now. That's why I say they kind of hurt it in a way. Marvel misstepped here a little bit. But it's a Marvel Studios production, all right? This would be one thing if it was Fox doing this or Sony doing this. Marvel Studios has earned a little bit of leeway here, and let's see if they could take advantage to it, with it. Back to you, Afternoon.
You know, we spoke about Tom Hiddleston. Captain mentioned this great actor. He really has embraced the Loki character. And, you know, I'm wondering if Marvel is going to have to do something about Loki, because from my understanding, it's 50,000 petitioners requesting for Marvel to give them more Tom Hiddleston. You know, Loki really is, he has embraced that character, and I don't know what you could do with these villain properties as films, but we see Sony is not afraid to explore that. You know, that's something else that I don't know if we've even explored it enough on this show. You know, there's always that flip side. You know, I think Mark Miller is going to have Nemesis, the Nemesis property to the listening audience. Nemesis is a standalone property by Miller, Mark Miller, the Scottish comic book creator. And essentially, Nemesis is the anti-Batman. What if Batman went rogue? And he's developing a movie that centers around for all intents and purposes, a evil Batman or evil Batman-esque character. So, again, we see that Sony is exploring the Sinister Six. We spoke about this on the show, that they have the intent to expand the Spider-Man universe. Their version of expansion is going into standalone villain territory for cinematic purposes. If that's the case, then is it safe to say that Tom Hiddleston may end up being in some kind of standalone Loki film? Captain, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think they're going to have to appease that?
Well, I would green light it right away. He's too good at the role. He's too good. You can't let that money tree just sit around like that. You could be getting more money. It's as simple as that. He's too good. He's just too good at it. Of course, you use some of the same people that's in the Thor movie. You know, you let some of these people, you know, make appearances and everything else. Of course you do that. But it's a story based around him. That's all. He's too good at it. Let's call a spade a spade. He knocked it out the park. Grand slam every time he gets up. It is what it is. Green light right away. Let's go. Green light. Let's go.
Listen, I've seen Hiddleston being interviewed, and the women go gaga. And he's encroaching on Chris Hemsworth's territory. You know, you would see him as having, you know, being more of, I guess, the matinee idol persona. But in all due respect and kudos to Hiddleston, Hiddleston has a type of charisma that has an appeal to women and beyond. Even the female geeks seem to center on this guy. And 50,000 online petitioners requesting that Marvel do something is something. Darryl, what are your thoughts on that?
I often said, more than any other fan base, if we united over something, you know, we would be able to get results that haven't been ever seen in Hollywood. You know, we would be able to move heaven and earth to get it, and these fans obviously have. And you know what? Here's the other thing, too, and never underestimate this. Middleton, from day one, when he got this role, I don't know if he was a geek before or a comic book reader before, but you've seen him talk about Young Avengers. You've seen him talk about reading the classic Avengers for the first time and learning what Loki's motivations were. He's put a very public face on the whole phenomenon of I wasn't a part of their lifestyle before, but I'm now, you know, endearing myself to the lifestyle, if that makes sense to you. You know, where he's made it cool to be one of us. And at the same time, he hasn't lost any of his charm. He hasn't lost any of his ability to shock people, and he hasn't gotten a big head. It's almost too perfect. And that being said, if we're doing Infinity Gauntlet, instead of having Mephisto be at Thanos' side, I would love to see Loki by Thanos' side. You know, for everybody that hasn't ever read Infinity Gauntlet by now, I'm kind of shocked if you're listening to this show and you haven't read Infinity Gauntlet. But just look at how Mephisto plays Thanos in that, and tell me you can't see Loki in that role. Back to you,
well,
AfroNerd.
For more information, they're going to go to a Nerdcore groove. What is really happening also that kind of dovetails off of what we're talking about with Loki is that there's already a Loki short that's going to be attached to this Thor 2 The Dark World Blu-ray DVD release coming up. So they're already, perhaps they're kind of setting us up for this, but there's going to be, from my understanding, a Loki-centered short that's attached to the Thor 2 DVD. So I might not have thought about getting the DVD. Sometimes I buy stuff, sometimes I don't. I mean, I saw the movie twice, but now I'm going to have to get it. I believe the short film is called All Hail the King. And if we remember from the last part of the Thor film, he posed as Odin. You know his power set. His power set is that he's able to, you know, he's a magician, so he's able to morph into whoever he wants to look like. So that also might be a way to find out, okay, well, he's posing as Odin. What does that mean? Again, All Hail the King is the short for this upcoming release. I believe next month, February 25th, is the release for the Blu-ray DVD. So we're being set up. I hope it works out for him. I'm very intrigued about this. I will say that much. I'm very intrigued. All right, listen, let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. When we get back, I want to talk about something that's been growing as my guilty pleasure with film. Well, TV, I should say. I cannot make the complaint that I did a few years back that TV sucks absolutely. Can't even do that anymore. Finding more and more stuff, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's go to, The Beast. The Beast, Freedom Suite. A few moments and we'll be right back. Let's groove.
If we must live for the moment,
bet we'll be winning the fight with all love. Victorious through the plight with all love. Can't be overcame with luck from Notre Dame. We numb as Novocaine if it don't involve love.
When we fail to recognize love, we don't exercise what's gonna help us rise up like a satellite, right? We can catalyze and rise above lies and abuse like fatter wives.
Okay, I write love letters with left hand, a five-finger discount. Free love and love that's young, love that's pure. Love endures and never lasts. Love blasts out speakers to people of all class.
Yeah. We would win more. We could endure. Yeah. And begin more. Yeah. We descend less. We be endless. Yeah.
Once knew a girl, it was love she would lack. But her mind and herself, she would lie on her back. Like it was the reason she falling off track. Get up with her sister, she called in off jack.
Her past time spent loving in part, loving in clubs and loving her butt, not loving her heart. Discovering dark details, leaving the mark, leaving her eyes with not even a spark.
But her spine was the truth, previously stated from the dude. Running from her dad, hide on the roof,
lying there, no clothes, crying in the room. Like, I don't wanna stay here, I just wanna move
to a place where the love ain't involved with the loot.
And to be a candidate, you need a rolling in a coupe, in a crib with a pool and a view of the valley.
But to the higher ups, you ain't gotta be cute.
Yeah, come a Growing up, she was the cutest, and dudes try to keep her confused, like a Rubik's, and she used to keep them amused. Then there was a coup, and then she refused, like a Buddhist. Shorty found love, when she started to come around love, she felt the energy around us, and the blood like heroin. Love deeper than aquarium, stronger than adamantium.
Yeah, we could win more, we could endure, yeah, and begin more.
Love the Beast. Guess what? I think this show is as strong as Andamadian. I said it. I believe it. That's it. Happy New Year's, folks. By the way, if you're listening to the sound of my voice, hopefully, old school, the mics are down. Sorry about that. Again, it's a new year, and the mistakes are fresh. All right, folks, still more to get into. The call-in number, of course, the water is warm, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. 9620. I was remiss. I see lovely Kim Success from Chi-Town is in effect. She says hello to all and hello right back at you. More discussion, more nerdcore, Afro-nerdic discussion. I want to skip around a little bit. Actually, thanks to Tambe Obenson, who was a colleague of Sergio Mims at Shadow and Act. Again, folks, go to Shadow and Act. /IndieWire.com or Google Shadow and Act or go to IndieWire.com. And they had a great piece over there that discussed something that I think we discussed also, but Mr. Obenson was a bit more succinct as far as the need for exploring African folklore, African fantasy, a la Game of Thrones. Now, someone mistook what he was talking about and said, well, why is it that we always have to have a black version of such and such? And I don't think that's what he was saying. He wasn't saying literally you have to have a black version of Game of Thrones. But what he was saying was that there's enough history of African enough of African history where you can delve into fact and or fiction or both with what transpired in Africa during the times of the Middle Ages. It just wasn't about Western civilization that was going on during the medieval period or the Middle Ages. Black folks were still alive and doing things, and kingdoms were created. Wars were taking place on the continent of Africa. A great deal of societal meanderings were taking place during the Middle Ages in Africa. We see that with the depictions of Asian folk. We have seen that in cinema of Asian history, fantasy and or fact. And I think it's time for black folk to kind of get there. Medieval thing going. Darryl, what are your thoughts about that?
It is a soluble point. We've often argued that, there's much more to our culture than street violence. There's much more to our culture than the stereotypes that are perpetuated every night on TV. You know, that stuff like this deserves to be seen. And certainly there's history books, of course not in the schools, but there's history books detailing this within our community. The problem is, our culture has been so indoctrinated with the ignorant stuff, you know, that I don't know if they'll get behind and support this. We'll get behind and support this. We'll encourage everyone to go and see this. The problem is, who has our back doing this? That's the main issue. You know, we could sugarcoat it all we want, but it feels like every time we suggest something like this, we either get one of two responses. Oh, you're too good for the rest of us, or, oh, no one wants to see that anyway. And that's kind of sad to me.
Well, you said a mouthful there, especially with your last statement about the sugar honey iced tea. No one wants to see this sugar honey iced tea anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you said a mouthful with that. I think if we were to go this route, you have to get some actors and some actresses with a following already, with a name. They just can't be good. They have to be good, and they also have to have a name. Once they have a name, that are black, that's what I mean, that are black, and you will be able to get people to follow it. You'll be able to garner attention via that route. That's what needs to happen. If you don't get that, and you just bring in actors and actresses that are just good at the roles, you probably will not be able to get, you know, people from all different demographics watching. And that's what they're going to want with something like this, the powers that be. They're going to want people from all different demographics. So when they look at those numbers, those Nielsen ratings, they can say, oh, okay, we have this, that, and the third watching. Let's go with it, and let's continue going with it. That's essentially how it works. And that's what I need. That's what I need, and that's what they're going to need in order to validate something like this. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
You know, as I'm thinking about this, and I was listening to what you were saying, Captain, you might not have to have a multiracial casting, although I'm not opposed to it. I love multiracial casting. But in this instance...
I didn't say anything about multiracial casting. No?
Well, you said... didn't you say you'd have to have more... I thought you said something that you had to have somebody else in there besides a black person in there.
Other demographics watching, not with the cast. The cast is going to be black.
Well, you know what? I made that connection. I'm assuming that if you're going to want to have other demographics, you're going to have other demographics. I'm sorry about that, but that's what I assumed, is that if you are going to request for other demographics to see your film, this is what they do to us anyway, speaking tribally, that you're going to have, well, look what happened with the poster. We spoke about this last week, the poster for 12 Years a Slave, that although Chiwetel Ejiofor, if I'm pronouncing the young man's name correctly, he was the slave. They were, you know, the Italian distributor was very slick in having either Michael Fassbender or Brad Pitt as their entire faces were on those respective posters. So, you know, they were looking for a larger demographic, and this is what they had to do. So that's what they thought they would have to do. But I was thinking that you might not have to go that route, because there's a precedent for it, at least 20 some odd years ago. When I think about Coming to America, which was not a period comedy, it wasn't, but you had an all-star black cast. And it was, Eddie Murphy, you had Arsenio Hall, you had James Earl Jones. You had that kind of cast that can cross the boundaries between race. So I'm thinking, if they were to do, and also another thing, the Remember the Time video. That could have been where we're talking about now, as far as that uber fantasy kind of thing. Michael Jackson, Iman, and Eddie Murphy. And the look of it was very much, kind of a hot look, to be honest with you, on a fantasy tip. So maybe you'd have to have your all-star crew of stellar black people, whether, you know, Oprah Winfrey, Denzel Washington, who else could I think of? Will Smith. You make an all-star thing going on. That might be what it would take. What do you think about that, Captain? That maybe if you have that caliber of talent with all these people in one sitting, an all-star affair of a African-based fantasy thing. What do you think about that?
Well, that's essentially what I was saying. These are people that have a following. All those people you mentioned, they already have a following. And they're followed not only by black people, they're followed by people in different demographics. And that's the only way I see it working. That's what it's going to take. You can't take the person who's a good actor or actress who doesn't have that type of following and just say, okay, get in the role. You just nailed the part. It's not going to work, not at least starting out. Later on, you can institute these people gradually. But starting out, you need those type of people that already have that following, that all-star cast. Exactly. You put that together, people will see it. You know, people will definitely go see it. They have a following coming from every direction. That's what's necessary. Then it flies. Then it gets approval. Then it gets validated. Then they get the check.
And you know something? Yeah, well, you know something else. I don't know why I was thinking about this. Wasn't thinking about this. Thanks to Q Storm for that. Q Storm jokingly says in the chat room, paging Angela Bassett. Yeah, you'd have to have her there too.
Of course.
And then Kim puts in dark black actors. I mean, they are varying hues in the on the African continent. I don't necessarily have to go that far. You do have Shamar Moore's going toward northern Africa. I dare say. And also he says, okay, now just throw a dark costume on one of those guys and I got my Black Panther movie. Yeah, that might be the fantasy. Well, listen, we'll see how that happens. But that's kind of how it could go down that way. You know, because there's a backstory and a back history of Wakanda. I mean, heck, even LL Cool J mentioned Wakanda in NCIS. I played the clip here and there every so often. So there's stuff to work with. I think even now that he's out of jail, Wesley Snipes with his production company, I forgot the name of it. I apologize too. But I believe he had the rights to the Black Panther. I believe at one time. But he has a whole thing with him, like a scripts and writings that's ripe for this kind of thing. So you have people who do, and also shout out to BlackScienceFictionSociety.com, those folks over there, BlackScienceFictionSociety.com. They also deal with this too. I mean, there's a number of universes online that really unpack on black fantasy. So it's not as if, you know, there isn't a template to use to go into this thing. But I just wanted to really shout out the premise. Shout out Mr. Obenson from Shadow and Act. I want to read something briefly. Actually, it's his revisiting this issue. This was dated January 3rd in his blog at Shadow and Act. But it's him actually reposting it from early 2013. So he's revisiting this thing again. Briefly, I'll read it, and then we'll move along. He says, I spent part of my day rewatching last season's episodes of Game of Thrones ahead of Season 3's premiere this Sunday night to reacquaint myself with the series. And as I watched, it hit me. I could envision a Game of Thrones-like fantasy TV series, likely on cable TV as well. Now, we didn't even talk about TV, ladies and gentlemen. We were talking about movies, but be that as it may. But instead of being set on the fictional continents of Westeros and Essos, created by author George R.R. Martin, the mini-stories would unfold within the several African kingdoms that ruled the pre-colonial continent before the so-called scramble for Africa in the late 1800s. And I'm not even referring to those ancient B.C. empires of Egypt. And that's another thing, too. We don't have to go to Egypt. Egypt is African, is an African country. It's also Middle Eastern. It's also North African. But because of the accomplishments of Egypt and Northern Africa, Western folks, Western culture always tries to take out the accomplishments of Egypt from it being an African country. That's like if someone invented something in Washington State, and all of a sudden they said, well, Washington's not really part of the United States. You know, we can't really consider them American. You see where this goes? But when it comes to that, that's the racism. I'll be the first to say that. Anyway, he says, and I'm not referring to those ancient BC empires of Egypt. We don't have to go that far into the past. Between the 1400s and the 1800s, there were a number of kingdoms, empires, dynasties that ruled all over Africa, like the Saudi dynasty in Morocco, Ethiopian dynasties in the east. I mean, he goes on and on. Zulu kingdom in the south. I mean, he's correct. The Ashanti empires in West Africa. There are a number of real-life dynasties that, A, should be explored for factual purposes, but B, should be explored for fictional purposes. Get out of the civil rights as the sole definer for black history. It seems as if black history or black depictions are relegated to slavery and civil rights and modern ghetto centricity. And then that's it. That's the end of it. No Harry Potter-esque for Jamal in the Bronx. That's not going down for him. All right. Well, we'll have to re-explore this. You know, we'll be getting into this here and there throughout the year because this needs to be pushed. I sincerely believe that. Now, I before the break, actually, I've spoken about some guilty pleasures that I've discovered. One is Amazon.com. Amazon.com is definitely trying to go for Netflix status. We spoke about Marvel Comics, ladies and gentlemen, about Marvel's deal with Netflix, and we can't wait for 2015 for that because of Daredevil and Iron Fist and Luke Cage. All those properties are going to be given the live-action treatment on Netflix. But Amazon.com has their thing also. And it's two TV series I'm really digging, courtesy of Amazon. One is Alpha House, which was created by cartoonist Gary Trudeau. For those who are familiar with Doonesbury, the legendary political comic strip, Gary Trudeau has dipped his toe into live-action comedy, and John Goodman is actually the lead character in Alpha House, and Kelly Ripa's husband, Mark Consuelos, he's in this, and it's really poking fun at conservatives, and it deals with conservative politicians, four specifically, that live in a townhouse in Washington, D.C. Wanda Sykes also makes an appearance in this thing. So they have top-flight, known talent on an Amazon.com vehicle. Alpha House is one. The second one is Betas. Betas is, I would think, maybe a more adult version, Bang Theory perhaps. Think of the Big Bang Theory with slicker geeks who are building a startup. So some may say it's trying a little too hard. Everyone's a little too slick. But I dig it. And who's in that? Ed Begley Jr. Mr. Green Energy himself. He's in there. As well as the latest episode has Sandra Oh from Grey's Anatomy. She's in there. So you have the young crew versus some of the older heads in Betas. But again, this is on Amazon.com. Amazon's supposed to be selling you T-shirts and DVDs. Now they're also giving you cinema. Daryl, did you hear about Alpha House or Betas? Anything on this? Any thoughts?
Well, Alpha House, I thought you know, that's their answer to House of Cards. I think that's their straight-up challenge to House of Cards. Betas, I'll tell you the truth. I saw the first couple of posters up in the subway, and I was like, oh, here we go again. And I'm looking at it, and I see a couple of white dudes, the token girl, an Indian dude. Hello? Could I get a black geek that's well represented? That was my first response. Because it looked, again, it looked like Big Bang Theory to me. And that's what I saw on the surface. And again, I'm like, you know, over here, there are some black geeks out there, you know. But, you know, I guess not everybody knows one. You know, that's my first. So Betas has a longer way to go to prove itself to me than Alpha House does. I'm just speaking real right there. But I just look at it like, hey, I would like me to be represented sometime and not as Urkel. Just food for thought, Cap.
That was good, Dow. That was good. Way to start off the new year. That was good. Well, let me tell you, the great Afro Nerd sent me, you know, via links, because actually the first couple of episodes are free for you to see, so you can see what's going on with these two shows. And what I did was this. I'm going to be honest with you. I went, I Googled the shows, I looked at all the write-ups, and with all the write-ups that I read, I was totally turned off. It was something I didn't want to watch, so I didn't bother. That's what I actually did. That being honest, I said, no, I'm not interested in this. It's not my cup of tea at all. Nope. I didn't give it a chance based on what I read. So it's just not my type of thing. I didn't like the imagery. I didn't like what I read. That was it. Turned off. It wasn't my type of thing. You know? That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, well, listen, not everything's going to be for everyone, but I liked it. Well, it first of all, you know, listen, we are heavily engrossed in political discussions on AfroNerd, so I kind of got in with what was going on in Alphas. You may want to give it a shot. Betas, I liked, but I believe when I spoke to you, it's funny that Daryl went into that rant, because I went into a similar rant with you when I first told you about this behind the scenes when I was speaking to the captain, that as much as I like the Big Bang Theory and also like now Betas, they play up on stereotypes, on favorable stereotypes when it comes to Asian folk, Indian folk, who are also Asian folk, and white folk. Those stereotypes, as far as the nerd, remain supreme. We do not see black nerds. Well, actually, it was one black nerd that did make an appearance, as I think about it. But he was kind of like really just a passing dude. You know, but it's heavily Asian, heavily Indian and or Asian, and white, as if there's no black geeks. I mean, we could talk about this. There may not be as many, but it's not as if they are non-existent. I mean, the gentleman who was one of the key guys at Oracle, not the Oracle, who was the tangential producer of the shows, my father, I'm talking about Oracle, the company, Oracle. One of the main dudes went to my alma mater, and he is of African descent. And he was one of the main dudes at Oracle. So, you know, you have black tech dudes. The head nerd in this country is, I say it in kindness, and I need to get him on the show. I actually spoke with his publicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I mean, he's like the face of science, and yet we forget that he's a black guy. I think Tyson might have made an appearance on Big Bang Theory, but we can never seem to get a black person as part of the crew. So even in betas, you know, this kind of press, this is a horrible thing. I mean, I'm going to go into an African rant, but you know, this is what I always talk about. That, you know, this cannot be. It's a poor representation for black culture and black people, and it's very much into having us or having black people, the trajectory for black excellence is going downward if you can't have a black smart male or female even. Heck, you can't have a black – there's a black doctor that's currently missing, ladies and gentlemen. I failed to talk about this. We had to get into it for the next show. Young black doctor is currently missing, black female doctor. Why can't we have these people depicted in a film? I don't know. You know, maybe three gentlemen that do a podcast that talk about, oh, I don't know, comic books and science fiction and politics. I wonder where they get those individuals from. I have to, you know, I hate to ask. All right. Moving right along. One other show, actually, not from Amazon.com, but I just happened to find this on the net. And it's geared toward teens, but I'm still a teenager at heart. I still like teen. Listen, heck, I look at Wizards versus Aliens, Daryl, and that's definitely for kids. But I still dig it for some reason. That's courtesy of the UK, Wizards versus Aliens. But there's another one that came out actually last year. I think it's season two, and it's called Wolf Blood. Are you familiar with this teen wolf-esque, wolf-themed, werewolf-themed series? Wolf Blood, Daryl?
I read up about it. Haven't seen an episode, but you know what? It doesn't surprise me that the British would do a send up of Teen Wolf. Like, why should all the Americans have the fun? Let's turn the convention on its ear. Let's do our own version. I mean, they've done it to our shows enough, so it doesn't surprise me in the least that the British would do something like this.
Yeah, and they also have, and again, they have minority representation and that, but that's the Brits. The Brits, when they explore this stuff in Britain, and I know that we have UK listeners, and we appreciate them wholeheartedly. And I know I know full and well that there's things that we may not notice that they could tell you, just as we had the Canadian lady that came through, and she could speak more succinctly about what's happening in Canadian society as we could speak more succinctly about what's happening in American society. But from what I could see outside looking in, their representation is better. I mean, heck, you have Idris Elba as Luther, the detective, which is definitely a send-up of maybe a black Columbo or maybe even a black Sherlock Holmes, where you know he's a thinking, empowered black person. I mean, I go on and on about this, ladies and gentlemen, because it's wow, I don't see it. I don't see enough of it here. But in the UK, I'm looking at bootleg sites, God forbid, allegedly bootleg sites, where I'm able to see the UK programming, and when they have black folks interspersed with everyone else, it doesn't seem like it's pandering to me, and it doesn't appear to be tokenism involved. Rachel DaCosta, yes. Q, thank you. Ms. DaCosta. Anyway, from Canada. Any thoughts on, you said you looked up some of the stuff, and Daryl. Did you happen to come across Wolf Blood? Any thoughts on that?
Who was the question for, Daryl or myself?
Okay. Either one. I go to you, Cap.
All right, I watched Wolf Blood. I did the due diligence. I watched the Wolf Blood a bit and everything else. Hey, I thought it was all right, but it's not really my cup of tea. You know, I wouldn't really diss it. There's nothing really to diss there. You know, there's a lot of different racial interaction and everything else. It's not something I would continue to watch. That's all. It's just not my cup of tea. But other people might find it rather interesting. I could see that happening. That's all. That's all I have to say about it.
Fair enough. We have a few more moments, ladies and gentlemen, minutes, excuse me. Dwayne The Rock Johnson has been speaking to the folks at DC and Warner Brothers, Darryl. What do you think they were discussing, and who is he going to be playing? What's the deal?
Well, Cyborg? I said on something I sent you guys. There's only three possible black male characters that he could, or kind of black male characters in the DC universe he could play. He could play Black Adam. He could play Cyborg, or he could play Steel. And that's why I said, also, hey, DC, time to step up your diversity thing again, all right? Because he doesn't fit the Black Lightning mold, and I don't see him being Black Lightning with Marvel doing Electro with being Jamie Foxx. I don't see that happening, all right? And Bronze Tiger, you've just used an Arrow, and Michael Jai White fit that perfectly. So you're not going to use him for that. That's the problem here, DC. There's only so many roles he could do. Given my druthers, hey, he should be the next Superman. Cue the internet crashing now. So I think it's going to be Black Adam. The problem is, with the renewed talk about Batman Superman, they've put a halt to any and all production, pre-production on the Shazam movie. So your guess is as good as mine as to who he could possibly be playing, because they don't have enough ethnic characters explored at DC to do something with him. Cap?
He's the backup in case Denzel says he doesn't want to play Green Lantern.
Oh, here we go.
Well, you know what? We got a few moments. We got a few minutes left. We got to talk about this back and forth a little bit before we go next door for Afternoon Radio. You know, we talked about Denzel, phenomenal actor. I saw something on a courtesy of Motley Fool. .com connected to Yahoo. They're not the kind of people that really throw out stuff that's really goofy. I mean, when they start talking about, because they look at things from the financial aspect of this, there seems to be more weight to this Denzel thing as the Green Lantern. I'm starting to believe this is like a real thing. And even with The Rock, this is my old nerd OCD going. You know, he might be able to do Black Lightning, man, because he looked like Black Lightning in Be Cool. Ladies and gentlemen, there was a sequel to Get Shorty that was the Chili Palmer, John Travolta thing. And then the second one that had him, and I think Cedric the Entertainer was in it as well, he had this big Afro wig, and he kind of sort of looked like, when you mentioned Black Lightning, I said, wait a minute. Not that he looks like that, Black Lightning looks like that now, but if you remember Black Lightning's costume, his mask was connected to this big Afro wig, and I'm thinking about how The Rock looked with that Afro as this closeted gay actor, which is like a side story, I believe, in Be Cool. So be careful when you say stuff like that, because I can see him in costume. Heck, Sinbad, fair-complected comedian. He was Black Lightning in an SNL sketch. So don't be so sure about that. So what do you think about that, Darryl, that this Denzel thing seems like it might be real?
Like I said, the only way I see it happening is if they got him locked up already for his own starring feature. Denzel don't do bit parts. Denzel is Denzel. That's why we love Denzel. He would do a bit part in it if he knew of the payoff later. And the problem is, Warner Brothers has a problem with paying this stuff off. Cap?
Well, actually, we got to move.
Oh.
Time is seconds remaining. Darryl, as always, we'll pick it up next week. We're going next door. After the radio.
Spawn for the beer.
Joy.
I think not. We'll be right back.
All right, listen up, y'all. I'm y'all substitute teacher, Mr. Garvey. I taught school for 20 years in the inner city, so don't even think about messing with me. Y'all feel me? Okay, take a roll here. Jay Quellen. Where's Jay Quellen at? No Jay Quellen here? Yeah.
Do you mean Jacqueline?
Okay, so that's how it's gonna be. Y'all wanna play. Okay then. I've got my eye on you, Jay Quellen. Balake. Where is Balake at? No Balake here today. Yes, sir.
My name's Blake.
Are you out of your goddamn mind?
Blake?
What? Do you want to go to war, Balake?
No.
Because we could go to war.
No.
I'm for real. I'm for real. So you better check yourself. D-Nice. Is there a D-Nice? If one of y'all says some silly ass name, this whole class is gonna feel my wrath. Now, D-Nice.
Do you mean Denise?
Oh, no. Bitch!
We are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bert, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Happy New Year once again, folks, and if you didn't realize it from that skit, we're for real. We are for real. Key and Peele, I can never get enough of that skit, and you know how we are about certain names, so it's befitting. And matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, next week on Wednesday, we're expecting a gentleman. His name evades me. I need that ginseng right now. Anyway, I'll let you know who his name fully, but he is the documentarian behind a film called Searching for Shaniqua. I kid you not, Searching for Shaniqua. You can definitely go to YouTube and check it out. And it's it seems to be a one long lament about some of these names and the visceral reaction that some African Americans have, like myself, perhaps like the captain, certainly like from the honor guard, Mr. Starks. When you hear LaMarcus and Shakima and Sharkeesha, and we know what Sharkeeshas are capable of. You can check that out courtesy of YouTube as well. All right, anyway, without further ado, as I said, I'm for real. Give you some urban alternative groove. This is Lowrider, Lowrider by Slapback, a cover. We'll be right back, and again, let's groove.
Yeah. Right on.
Bam.
You know, I spoke and I thought that you guys heard me. Let me repeat what I said. That jam was so funky, I thought that I stepped in something. Folks, again, that was a classic groove, Low Rider, this time by a group called Slap Back. Let's get into it, folks. Captain Kirk, you're needed on the bridge again. Let's get to it.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Kissed Ternisha goodbye. Now I'm ready to do this show. Let's do it.
Ternisha. I hope that was a 12 a.m. visit, by the way, Captain. You might be able to stand a Sharkisha 12 a.m. I wouldn't suggest 12 p.m. 12 a.m. would be, of course, for Bible study. Anyway, folks, welcome to the new year with Afro Nerd and the Captain. The call-in number once again, 646-915-9620. A lot to get into with a short amount of time, so let's just get into it. Skipping around a little bit, but I think this time I was going to talk about the New York City mayoral inauguration with Mr. de Blasio and family. And I like the family. I'm all into human beings being together, multiracialism. I have no qualms with it. I practice it. The captain practices it. Our friendships cross-racial. But the politics, I'm a little shaky about. So, you know, we'll get into that momentarily. But I want to talk about Dr. Melissa Harris Perry. It's been a hullabaloo, ladies and gentlemen, hullabaloo, with some comments she made toward Mitt Romney, former governor, Mitt Romney's adopted black grandchild. And I don't have that clip because I just didn't want to get into that. But I do have her apology. And honestly, if you heard the exchange, well, you know, listen. Captain. We'll get into it. I know where you're going to go with this thing. I thought that the initial exchange, she had a group of comedians on her talk show, and they went a little too far, I thought, but it was light, but it was not light enough when you're talking about infants. When you're talking about infants, you're talking about absolute, just... innocence. Absolute innocence. You just can't clown a baby. And that's what they were doing. They were trying to throw jabs at the GOP, rightfully or wrongfully, again. Rightfully or wrongfully. But you can't use an infant to do it. She got into trouble, and they would not let it go. So let's go to her apology. She apologized, I thought, adequately through Twitter. But then she took a week once the dust up just wasn't quite settling, to do this rather emotional apology. So let's get to apology, and then we will unpack further, because there's even more on this. Hold on.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Harris Perry, and we have a lot of news and politics to discuss this morning. But before we get to that, I am going to start with an apology. Last Sunday, we invited a panel of comedians for a year-in-review program. It's what we call our Look Back and Laughter. But in one of the segments, we looked at a number of photos that caught our attention over the course of the year. And in that segment, I asked my guests to provide kind of off-the-cuff ideas for captions of the photos that we were seeing. Among the images we aired was one of the Romney family that showed Governor Mitt Romney's grandchildren, including his adopted grandson, who is African-American. Now, given my own family history, I'd identified with that picture, and I intended to say positive and celebratory things about it. But whatever the intent was, the reality is that the segment proceeded in a way that was offensive, and showing the photo in that context of that segment was poor judgment. So without reservation or qualification, I apologize to the Romney family. Adults who enter into public life implicitly consent to having less privacy, but their families, and especially their children, should not be treated callously or thoughtlessly. My intention was not malicious, but I broke the ground rule that families are off limits, and for that I am sorry. Also, allow me to apologize to other families formed through transracial adoption, because I am deeply sorry that we suggested that interracial families are in any way funny or deserving of ridicule. On this program, we are dedicated to advocating for a wide diversity of families. It is one of our core principles, and I am reminded that when we are doing so, it must always be with the utmost respect. I'm genuinely appreciative of everyone who offered serious criticisms of last Sunday's program, and I am reminded that our fiercest critics can sometimes be our best teachers.
All right, Captain, that was Dr. Melissa Harris-Perry. You know what came through my mind is, what will it take for the Afriner to apologize? What will it take? And I suspect, let me put it this way, I can apologize, but what will it take for me to be emotional like that? Maybe if I was going to lose my job.
Yes.
My seven-figure job. You know, I can see me crying, oh, please. I'm sorry. I didn't want to make fun. I didn't want to make fun of Al Sharpton's haircut. I didn't want to do that. But I have a corporate buttocks girlfriend, and I have a new Porsche, and I have a $2.5 million salary. Please don't let me let it go away. I'm sorry. That might be what it would take, Captain. It might. I just have $250,000 combo collection I just bought, and I have this flat screen TV and a tree house I had in the back of my mansion. I don't want to lose it. I'm just saying. You know, I don't know. I see our friend from Chi-Town wants to weigh in. I think he has a bugaboo about Dr. Perry, as do we all. You know, before I let him in, you know, we spoke about this before. On the surface, I kind of dig her. On the surface, you know, she's an attractive woman. I think she's not quite 40. She could use some Afro Nerd 12 a.m. healing, I suspect.
There we go.
If there was a pedicure, manicure, accoutrement that I like to my own personal freakishness. Anyway, but despite that, I don't, you know, that victimized politics thing, man, I'm so far removed from that. I just can't do it. What she did, when we spoke about her before, with the young lady from the Bronx that was a urban farmer to the listening audience, and this woman said that, you know, my people, I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, my people are always dogging me out because I had three kids or four kids with four different baby fathers, and, you know, the white people don't down me, but it's my own people. And then Melissa Harris-Perry proceeds to go off stage. This was some kind of gathering. And Bell Hooks was in attendance, another educator. And she goes off stage in an emotional thing and hugs this woman, caresses her, everything's going to be all right. I'm sitting there saying, wait a minute. You can't tell somebody that their zipper is down, Captain. You can't do that. You know what I mean? That's the grotesque analogy, ladies and gentlemen. But that's basically what you're saying. If you keep on having kids by different men, and your people can't tell you, hey sis, you have to slow down. It's not a good look. They're wrong for doing that. But Dr. Perry comes in and hugs you, appeases you, coddles a grown woman who is, I believe, 30, 31, and on her, what, she was pregnant while, again, while speaking about this. All right, let's let the man from Chi-Town come through. You know, I want to love Dr. Perry, but I can't. It's silly. Let's get to it. Serge, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. How you doing?
Pretty good. Shadow and Act, ladies and gentlemen. Shadow and Act, go there immediately.
And Matt, I'm just finished writing a new article right now. It's now up. Hey, okay, Perry, you know, I must tell you something. I really dug her at first. I really did. I thought, man, she's smart, she's attractive, she's this, she's that. When they gave her her own show, she went off the rails. I can almost understand now why Cornel West has a problem with her.
Yes.
He called her a sellout. Here's the problem, and this ties into the thing with Tanya Fields, and this is the same thing that goes with the thing about the Romney kid. That's not going to get her fired. That's pretty minor. That's not getting her fired. I think she was really sincere. I think what happened, and a friend of mine and I were talking about the Tanya Fields thing, and my friend said, well, you know what Perry's problem is? She had to defend Tanya Fields simply because of the fact that she's this light-skinned, biracial woman. And probably all her life she's trying to prove how black she is. And she couldn't attack Fields because she was afraid then people would say, who's this light-skinned bougie chick coming down on this dark-skinned, heavy-set sister? Right? And I think that colors a lot of what she does. I think she's constantly trying to prove herself. I didn't see the bit with the original bit with Romney's adopted grandson. But I bet what happened was she wanted to do a piece about it, but then she got carried away by the guests on the show and went along with it trying to prove how black she is. And then when it fell back on her, she realized, I made a mistake. She says herself, she's biracial. She was raised, I guess, by a white family, the Mormons. The white side of her family comes from a Mormon family.
That's
right?
True.
So I think that probably she wanted to do a serious or something more substantive piece, but then she got carried away by the guests who were mocking the kid, and she felt like, well, I guess I got to go along with them because if I don't, then people are going to jump on me. And I think that's what guides her is this fear that, am I black enough? Can I prove I'm black enough? It's sort of like the analogy I make is with Alicia Keys. Do you remember when Alicia Keys first came out, the way how she used to talk?
Oh, yeah.
I would have avoided
her like the plague.
I like
Alicia Keys physically. But when she was going into that Yo-Yo Ma type of, and I don't mean the artist, but that.
Right, not the cellist, right.
Not the artist, but the Yo-Yo, I'm down kind of thing. So what? This is horrible.
Right. She's a Juilliard graduate.
Yes.
What happened was that she felt she had to do that because she didn't want people saying, she just got over because she's this white-looking, light-skinned chick. And, you know, I think she's gotten out of it. I haven't heard her talk recently or say anything recently. I assume she got out of it, but she did it really bad. Even Howard Stern called her out about that back then. Why is she talking like this? And I think for a lot of – light-skinned, biracial people, I think they feel that they constantly have to prove themselves. And I think that's the case of Marissa Harris Perry.
You know, look, I'm not completely on that line of thinking. I'm half there with you. Only because I think a lot of black people, if you're going to be really dig deep enough on this, Serge, a lot of black people across the spectrum do this. I think that there's a lot of black folks, light, medium, or dark, that don't really want to give you an honest answer. They want to go along with the tribe. And maybe is a little bit, maybe it's a little bit more intense with someone who's lighter complected. But I'm thinking there's a lot of stuff that I don't like seeing. I mean, listen, Dr. Perry wouldn't need any help. There wouldn't be any difficulty in finding other people that would have done what they did to that woman. I mean, there are a crew of people that believe in not really critiquing black people. I mean, we saw that with Bill Cosby. He's a brown-skinned black man.
No, I'm going to tell you something. I read a lot of articles criticizing Tanya Fields. I read a lot of articles. Even Boyce Watkins, who wants to be like the blackest black guy around, he wrote a long piece criticizing Tanya Fields and Melissa Perry for supporting her. So, I mean, she had no problem finding people. And I think she knew very well. I think she knew very well that what this woman was doing was wrong. But she just couldn't do it. And I agree with you, it's just not a thing with light-skinned people, but I think she feels that pressure. If you're that kind of person, I think that she feels the pressure more intensely, that she has to prove herself. And particularly, I think, after she got all that criticism from Cornel West and from Travis Smiley, and now, in a way, maybe she's trying to prove herself to them as well. I don't know why, but maybe.
I mean, you know, listen, you have, it's a little too complicated, I think, to say that, because you have someone like, what's his name? I'm always referencing him, a controversial, Shelby Steele. Dr. Shelby Steele is also biracial, but he's a black conservative. And he analyzes this stuff, and people don't like him. I mean, I don't know if you can piecemeal the black thing. You know, I'm a little sensitive about that, because I see the totality of the picture.
The thing about it, anybody can have
their own opinion. And he has a twin brother.
Anything.
Hold on. Shelby Steele has a twin brother who is a liberal professor. I just think that the black community is at war with itself. And that's part of why this show
exists. I don't think anybody can have any kind of opinion they want to have. That's not the thing. I think the problem with I have with Harris Perry, or Melispa, as people have been calling her, is the fact that hey, I didn't coin it. I saw this somewhere and I thought it was pretty good. I think she how can I phrase this? There's something somewhat disingenuous about her. Like, I still think she's, like, does she really believe what she thinks, or she feels that she has to play a role?
Well, listen, I hear what you're saying. I'm not quite sure about what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, but I'm not quite sure of it. All I can say is that if you speak to any of these really hardcore Afrocentric liberal black folk, they're going to give you an answer like she gave you. They're going to act this way. That's my issue. That's why I don't know if I can go as deep as to her parentage, because we've seen people. You could pick a hat. Someone who just has this belief system. That's the issue. Is that I think I spoke to the captain about this before, and I might have spoken to Mr. Starks about this recently. Is that my problem? I mean, we're going to talk about this in the next segment when we talk about the mayoral inauguration of the De Blasio's. How many black radicals were in attendance in this thing? I was raised on some of this black radical stuff. The ISIS papers, it's very seductive, black radicalism, black nationalism. The problem is these radical Negroes, Sergio, do not have an answer for Negro nonsense, a.k.a. nigga nonsense. The new Black Panther Party will wave their fingers and be very, very confrontational when there's a white man in a pinstripe suit who's trying to do something they consider racial. But when Shaquan comes through with his blue do-rag on doing the Crip walk, he's not there to answer to that. That's when black radicals lose me. That's where Melissa Perry, Dr. Perry loses me. And so a lot of these radical types lose me is they're not about the dysfunctional no matter what you do. So whether her parentage is biracial or monoracial, you're still going to come across the same mindset. That's why, that's where I'm a little suspect on going there with she's having angst about how black she is. Captain, what are your thoughts
I agree with Kim's success. Kim's success says she's probably crying because she disrespected her mother. I think that's a very good point.
Maybe. That's we can go on theory. I think, listen, she wasn't prepared to go there until the heat started getting on her. Let's be real about that. This apology comes a week after. It's one thing to go into it the following day and to be sincere about it. I think the reality, I go by Occam's razor. Occam's razor is the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. The simplest one is she didn't want to lose a job.
She has said other things on that show that has gotten her criticized that she has not apologized for. I actually expected her to apologize or to say something about the Tanya Fields case, to talk about the LGBT. She didn't do that. There have been other things she's done on her show, which, has gotten her a lot of criticism from people and from the right, from other people. She hasn't said a word. This thing, she had apologized because I think this affected her personally. And I think she realized, like Kim Fassett said, I think, I just insulted my family. I just insulted how I was raised. I went along with everybody else, and now I hurt a lot of people. I think she was really sincere about the apology.
I think that Tulane University, that check is not the same as MSNBC's check, Serge. Occam's razor. Captain, your thoughts? You might see a bucket full of tears from Afro Nerd if my Porsche's lease runs out and I'm losing a check. That's what my belief. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, what I think is, with the ultra liberal agenda at the heart of a lot of these things, you cannot be on a podium. If you're a podium person, what does that mean? That means the type of person that has their act together. You cannot tell somebody who's beneath the podium. What does that mean? Someone who does not have their act together. You cannot tell that person, you need to do this, you need to do that, even though it's sensible, even though it makes sense. The liberals come in, they rush you. They say, you can't tell this person that. Who are you? Who are this? We're all the same. So you have a lot of that happening at this given point. With anything that we do. You have it happening in the black community. Oh, some educated black person is telling me that I shouldn't be on welfare for the second generation and I should just go ahead and get a job. Some black person who is a millionaire who pulled themselves up from their bootstraps is telling me, they're telling you the right thing. But you're not allowed to do that underneath this dynamic that we're in. They're telling you the right thing. And it doesn't matter whether they're black or whether it's white. The white liberal, the white person who, let's say, is not a liberal cannot tell the next person the same thing who's beneath them. People come in and say, oh, he's telling me what to do. So you catch it from all different angles. Now, directly pertaining to her situation, Miss, what did he say, Lispa? What did you say, Sergio? What was it?
Melispa.
Melispa.
That was beautiful. Directly pertaining to her situation, I think it's totally a controversy. It has become a controversy. Because in my opinion, she started thinking about there might be a situation here with a job. I do have to agree with AfroNerd. And also, going also on the same side with Sergio now, there's been situations on this show where a lot worse, but didn't catch as much feedback from what I see.
Yep.
For whatever reason, they decided to run with this because it was more, a black and white situation in my opinion. But here's a joke of the situation. Let's make a joke. That kid right there in the picture, chances are he's going to go to a good school, don't you think? You look like that kid is going to be all right at the end of the day.
Well, I want to go through a quick groove. Serge, I want you to hold on for a minute. I want you to on something because I'm going to try to fit in this New York City mayoral thing. I'm going to actually concede to something concede to my desire to speak about on-break baby making. We got to talk about this on-break thing, and if there's enough time, we're going to talk about. I know you want to talk about this. This on-break baby thing has to be discussed because it's annoying me. We could always get on liberalism and radical black folk at this thing, but on-break baby making is the next. It's the wifey and hate. You know, you're a hater. On-break now is the new lower tier term that is just is passing off. It's passing off dysfunctionalism now. We always have an excuse, and now we're on break baby making now. This is ridiculous. Let's go to a quick groove. More with Sergio Mims. Again, folks, Shadow and Act, IndieWire.com. This is Marcus Miller, jazz man. Marcus Miller with Macy Gray. I love myself. Macy Gray. Girls and Boys covering You Know Who. We'll be right back.
All right, Marcus.
Once again, give you the best of urban alternative groove. That was Marcus Miller featuring Macy Gray. And that was a cover of Prince's Girls and Boys. We're back in full effect, folks. This is the Grindhouse, the second half, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. We have a friend of the show, Sergio Mims, online as well. I wanted to bring him back in because I'm sure he has an opinion on this growing trend. I don't know if MTO created it. I mean, as far as labeling it, they seem to have a penchant for labeling things. So now we're hearing this on-break thing. I think the participants in on-break baby-making might be gone there. I think they're saying more. Ludacris is one. The rapper, Chris Bridges, Ludacris, rapper, actor, and also Dwayne Wade. They have these beautiful women beautiful paramours, can't seem to get enough. But they're, from my understanding, when they have a lull in these relationships, they take a break. They take a break, and while they're taking a break from that paramour, they seek solace. They drown their tears in the bosom, literally, of another side piece, another term they use, side chick, I think is what they're saying, the kiddies on the street, these poor souls on the street. They'll say that they'll have midnight shenanigans or daytime shenanigans with these young women that are not their normal paramours, and they'll have a child with them. When they reconvene with the real woman they want to be with, there's a child in tow. Whether it's speculative, whether these people really were on, quote-unquote, on break. What the hell is this? Sergio, you must have your thoughts. I know you are an avid media takeout reader.
And
that
lovely, well, from what I understand.
Just like the New York Times and the Washington Times.
Yes, I do. I read the New York Times, too. I enjoy all the meats of our cultural stew.
Okay.
So, look, from what I understand, number one, in the case of Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union, who always looks to me like she's 16 years old, you know.
Yeah, she's 40-something.
I don't know, baby's face, women don't do it for me. It just, you know, go away and come back when you're grown up. But anyway, from what I understand, number one, everybody's saying it's karma because supposedly she stole him away from his wife. Number two, people went back and they realized that they weren't on this break when this child was conceived. So it wasn't really a thing like a break. It's simply that he's a dog and he's going around, you know, sleeping with other women. You know, and they're still planning to get married. I don't know about that. Ludacris and his, I don't know if it's girlfriend or fiance, they have a problem, and it turned out that the woman who's going to have his baby is someone he's known since high school. They both went to Benjamin Banneker High School in Atlanta. So it's like, it's just guys being guys. It's celebrities being celebrities. This whole thing about a break sounds like a convenient excuse to try to excuse the fact that they're dogs. You know, are they going to stay together? Are they going to get married? I wouldn't marry a guy. If I was Gabrielle Union, I wouldn't marry him, despite how I got him, whatever the stories are true. I wouldn't marry a guy or be engaged to him when I find out he's going around following other children. And I never bought that whole thing about Dwayne Wade anyways being this great devoted father that he has this image of. He sure must be a father. He's having kids all the time. So I never bought that. Go ahead.
Well, I know that he makes, $17 million a year. The captain might be more might have more knowledge than that, but I know he makes a lot of money. And that's the wisdom on some of this stuff, the conventional wisdom. Occam's razor, I think, again, works on this one, too. From my understanding, I think Ludacris is trying to not be so accurate as to how much he makes because I think he's
trying to avoid. He's being very fuzzy about how much he – How much he's actually worth. I've heard all kind of figures. I've heard $17 million, and then also I heard that Ludacris could be worth as much as $80 million.
I would believe that, definitely. I would, considering how long he's been in the business. He's done movies. He does concerts.
Right.
I think there's some money there, and he's also living in Georgia. It's not an expensive place to live in per se, but he's going through the fuzzy math because he doesn't want to pay child support. He doesn't want to pay as much child support. But I guess my whole thing is, and we go through this all the time on the show, there's these terms that seem to be excuse terms, whether it's, you know, a legitimate critique is now hating. If you tell someone you really shouldn't deal drugs, you really shouldn't beat up on people, you're just a hater. If you're with a woman and you continue having children with them, with these women, but you don't want to marry them, you pretend to marry them, and you say, she's a wifey. We don't need any papers. She's my wifey. She's my boo. It's a way to get around being real. And On Break is another example of getting around being real. And this is the genius of black folk in the negative. The genius is somehow we have the ability to deflect. We're masters of deflection.
Well, you know what, this is...
It's crazy.
Maybe because I'm older. Maybe because I'm older, but all this seems to me is why is this lack... Why does everybody have this lack of responsibility? Younger generations seem to have this lack of responsibility. When I was growing up, you know, you were responsible. You're trying to be responsible for what you did and your behavior or your relationships and all that sort of stuff. You were responsible. Nobody wants to be responsible anymore. Everybody wants to take the easy way out. Well, it seems to me. Take the easy way out, sort of like for example, like living together. Believe it or not, I'm not a fan of that, of a couple living together. Because as far as I'm concerned, the guy likes it because he's got a free maid and a cook. And the woman does it because she's auditioning the guy for marriage. But if you're really serious, you know, I know a couple, they've been together for 25 years. They live separately. They're not married. They live separately. They have a wonderful relationship. But they don't pull the stuff about we're living with each other. They don't deal with that. Actually, the guy actually has two homes. He has one here. He has one on the East Coast. And they've been having this great relationship. But it's not this but they're older people. They're like in their 60s. They're older people. They don't believe in this nonsense that let's live together and let's pretend that we're married and let's do this facade or this charade that we're actually in a committed relationship when actually you're living together in the back of your mind, hopefully I might find somebody better than this.
I tell you what I don't like is I'm like you, Sergio, is that I guess I was just raised a certain way. I'm not really too keen on the living together thing also. You know, I live in my spot, you live at your place, and when we decide to get serious, we just tie it up. We just do it in a serious manner. I don't see
that
now. Yeah,
it's like nobody
like
wants to be responsible. Everybody wants to pretend.
Unfortunately, the culture has gone in that direction, and the culture that is being promoted doesn't even engender responsibility. You're not going to get responsibility. I mean, listen, when you think about some of our iconic people, going back to Brock Peters. And the dearly departed Juanita Moore, I sent you an email about her, the actress from, and
right,
also Phil
right.
Avery is gone also. Phil Avery
right.
is gone, Uncle Phil. But I'm thinking about more classic folk, whether it's Paul Robeson or Sidney Poitier, these people, even if their personal lives were just in disorder, we even see that much of that. It was a little bit of that going on, but it was more I got married to, you know, you get married. But there was a sense of legitimacy with these people. Their art really wasn't that disconnected from their personal lives. What we're seeing now is the art is very reflective of their personal lives. The art is chaotic and non-existent, and their personal lives are non-existent and chaotic. So, I mean, it's a cultural thing. We just have to deal with it.
One of the main reasons why for that is that this is not true anymore, and you can say this is a little unfair. But when you look at people like Leontine Price, Nat King
yeah.
Cole, Johnny Mathis, you look at those people, they knew that for better or for worse, they were a representative.
Yeah, because Mathis...
People will look at them and saying that...
His public face is different than... Mathis' public face,
right.
as you know, is different than
exactly.
his personal. Exactly.
His private face was something that's completely different.
Yeah, but he's always, his public face is always on point.
Right. You're a representative. You are a representative. So then when I see someone like, who's this, they all call it the coon now, this woman on the talk, Underwood, Cheryl Underwood.
That's right. We spoke about her with the nappy-headed comment,
But she's done even worse. Her whole thing imitating Miley Cyrus on the wrecking ball.
Oh, I saw that.
That woman, you know, it's right. Exactly. There's no way in the world back in 1967 you would see a black person acting like that on television. You wouldn't see that. you wouldn't see that. It was just like, there's no way I'm going to do that because I am a public face and I am a representative, even though, okay, I am a representative. So therefore, I have to be a certain, I have to live
conduct
my
yourself,
life,
right.
in a public life in a certain way, in a certain way. You know, one with dignity and one for respect of self, right? So I'm not going to be acting this way. But you see, people today, and I'm talking about black celebrities, today you're going like, why are you doing that?
Well, now, today,
like,
you know what Underwood,
Desmond?
Well, now, hold on. Your black celebrity will be Rihanna smoking a blunt on a beach half naked and tweeting about it.
But then seeing Rihanna half naked, then, you know, you can argue there is some good things about that. But anyway.
Yeah. I said that with a half, you know. Go ahead. But
right.
It's still wrong. It's still wrong. But it's, you know.
Yeah, but, you know. Yeah, I know.
It is.
But anyway,
Captain,
what does Captain Kirk say about this?
Yeah, Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, that means Tarnisha has to leave. She has to pack up her stuff and leave. There's no sense in her being here because it's not going to happen with Tarnisha. That's all.
I don't follow you. What do you mean?
Tarnisha.
Yeah.
Tarnisha. You missed the joke. All right. There you go. There's no sense in going into and explaining it.
Yeah, we did.
All right.
You mean Sharkisha or you just made Tarnisha?
Oh, I said in the beginning of the show, Tarnisha. I kissed Tarnisha goodbye to come to the show.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah. Okay, now,
Sergio
okay. Delayed reaction.
Yeah, you missed it. It's a done deal. You missed it.
Okay.
You didn't get it.
Sorry, Kirk. Yeah, but we're at a different time. No one seems to want to speak about this stuff, and it's being sold. But this on-break thing, I just felt we had to talk about it because it seems there's a couple of things attached to it. One, you're seeing women who are very, very tolerant of black male dysfunctionalism because there's a dollar sign at the bottom of it. That's another factor in this. Both these men just happen to be well-paid celebrities, and they have access. You know, it's one thing. You're paid. You have access. You have choices. And, you know, they feel like they don't have to be – they don't have to settle down. And, you know, listen, all of us would want to be in that tax bracket. But just because I'm in that tax bracket doesn't mean that my morals have to go out the window. I still want to be – I still want to maintain my morals as well as being successful. But these guys, there's no moral culture to even deal with them. You know, you couldn't pull this, like Sergio talked about, in the 50s and 60s, there was a cultural, societal, moral thing there that was a barrier. That you just couldn't, you know, you would really be embarrassed by this behavior. There's no sense of embarrassment. So you can do what you have to do. You can be on break and just have these kids. And something else, not to be so grotesque, but I'm going to go there. I would not want to spill coffee at Starbucks. Coffee at Starbucks is expensive. So spilling sperm, expensive. These gentlemen spill sperm. Easier than spilling coffee at Starbucks. And I don't want to spill coffee at Starbucks because it's expensive. To pay for children because you're on break is no one just has these discussions. I mean, if I'm a multimillionaire, I certainly want to stay there. I certainly don't want to give that up. Antonio Cromartie, we mentioned his name quite a bit, the football cornerback. This gentleman, what, six or seven kids, six or seven different women, six or seven different checks have to go out. You are literally screwing yourself into poverty, to be vulgar. Come on. Enough already. All right. We got a few more moments remaining. Enough of this on-break nonsense. I hope more people critique it, though. I say that much. We're critiquing it. I hope more people hate on it. I don't mind being a hater. I'll take that. I'll be the hater. Since some black folks don't like the term, I will be the hater. I'll hate on it, and let's critique it, and let's talk about the nonsense and the expense of being on break. I did want to talk about the recent New York City mayoral campaign. It's a very local thing. I know we have folks like Sergio that's from Chicago, and of course Kim's from Chicago. Q is across the bridge. Or actually, he's also in Philly sometimes as well. But anyway, this may be more of a local thing, but it was treated very much like a pre-presidential run. It was very, very big. I mean, New York City is, you know, listen, New York City is important nationwide, internationally, whether people hate on New York or not. It is true. But to see Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton there, Harry Belafonte, all these heads of state that were there for the mayor of New York, and the type of discourse and the type of bellyaching about, well, you know what, before let me not go into it. You got 7 minutes. Let me play a clip of a gentleman. His name is Mr. Lucas, I believe, Reverend Lucas. He went into this real, real radical rant for a mayoral inauguration. Now, this reverend is the chaplain for the New York City Sanitation Department. Why do garbage men need reverends? I don't know. I don't know. That within itself is weird. But be that as it may, this is the sanitation chaplain talking about New York City. Hold on. Get a load of this.
Sound forth the trumpets of heaven proclaiming a new Emancipation Proclamation in New York City. Empower these, your servants here assembled, Mayor de Blasio, Public Advocate James, Comptroller Stringer, to help set captives free from all the vestiges of bondage and limitations upon who we are and who we can be. For your divine leadership, emancipate every New Yorker from the shackles of fear, futility, and frustration. From poverty, homelessness, helplessness. Help us to be mastered only by the masters of love and compassion, wisdom and determination. Let integrity never stand on the auction block or be sold to the highest bidder. Free us from the shackles of partisan politics, political correctness, and personal egos and agendas. Deliver us from evil and lead them not into all of the temptations and intoxications that shall abound. O God, O God, O God, O God, O God, end the civil wars and usher in a new reconstruction era that builds upon the many successes and achievements of yesterday while proclaiming the beginning of a new beginning. Let the plantation called New York City be the city of God, a city set upon the hill, a light shining in darkness. Elevate our valleys, make low our mountains, make our crooked places straight, and our rough places smooth. O God, O God, O God.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, that was the chaplain of the Senate of the New York City. I'm sorry, Captain?
Greek theater. Continue.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. That's excellent. That's exactly what it was, theater. We only have about 4 minutes remaining, so I'll just be really brief, and we will have to revisit it maybe, well, we'll see, because Wednesday we have Mr. Phil Branch. Phil Branch is the documentary filmmaker of Finding Shaniqua, searching for Shaniqua. So we're going to get into the whole name thing again, folks, so stay tuned for Wednesday on that one. Anyway, you know, listen, I saw a lot of radicals. I would consider black nationalists, black radicals, and their speechifying, for lack of a better term, is very seductive. They took pot shots at former mayor Bloomberg. But I said this before in the last segment. These black radicals, the new Black Panther Party, they seem to be missing with the dysfunctional nonsense that's occurring. Not too far in my neighborhood of St. Albans, my parents' neighborhood, to be more specifically, my parents' neighborhood of St. Albans, there was a shooting with one of 50 Cent's cohort folk. Four p.m. in the afternoon, shot in a car. One of the 19-year-old neighbors said, we're not accustomed to this kind of stuff here. This is not Brooklyn. So you got to get accustomed to it now. four adults being shot, cohorts of 50 Cent in a car, 4 p.m. Babies being killed. We see the nonsense that's going on in Chicago. We have our similar gang situation that, you know, not to the degree of Chicago. Chicago's in a place by itself. But it's not as if stuff like that is unfamiliar to New Yorkers with gang violence. And the radicals have nothing to say about that. We saw great actor, singer, Harry Belafonte, one of my personal heroes. But, you know, as far as his politics, I'm not with his politics. They don't have an answer for what's going on the street level. It's very great to discuss Cornel West's politics in a classroom setting. But when you try to apply it in the real world, dealing with this nonsense on the street, where your babies and your grandparents and your parents are under threat by hooligans, you know, people, the knockout game appears to be somewhat of a reality. Also in Brooklyn, via Facebook, Kathy, you know about this, 400 black youth, had to be that way, 400 predominantly black youth got together for a local mall as some kind of Facebook flash mob thing, and proceeded to terrorize during Christmas shoppers at a Brooklyn mall. So when this happens, then these same people will say, well, you know, you can't profile us. What are you profiling us for? Well, maybe it's because 400 black youth went on a rampage. I mean, it's not happening in a vacuum, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, you can't speak this way, but these radicals were on the stage during the mayoral inauguration. And again, I like de Blasio's family, multiracial family, black wife. De Blasio is Italian, white male, his kids, multiracial, very Afrocentric in appearance. Dante de Blasio, the son's huge Afro. They can't not stop talking about this kid. When he shovels snow, we had a snowstorm, he shovels snow, it makes news. But the family I like, the politics I do not. Captain, any thoughts? We got a few moments remaining, and then we're going to have to head on up out of here.
There's no time to really get into it. So until next time, which will be Wednesday.
Yeah, next time, we'll revisit it again. Still at the beginning of the year, folks. Enjoy the new year. Be safe. Be conscious. Have that third eye. Sergio, as always, a welcome addition to the show. We appreciate when you come in with your insights.
This guy on Wednesday. We have written about him before on Shadow and Act. I definitely will be listening Wednesday.
Please do. This is The Rainbow Children, folks, by Prince. See you on Wednesday. You don't want to miss that show.
Thank you.